Hi, and welcome back to another episode of the Locked On College Football Podcast. We are back, of course. We are in the midst of bowl season. But the first thing I do have to say is that NFL action, it was not a great weekend for either one of our teams. The Cowboys lost in the pivotal NFC East matchup to the Eagles, and then my Vikings lost last night in a showdown in the NFC North to the Packers. So we're still trying to lick our wounds and trying to get back to our normal selves. So just forgive us if we are a little bit down during the earlier portions of today's show. So, Jonah, you've had a little bit of time to recover, but you're Cowboys, man. Like, what's going through your mind right now, if you can put it into words?
I got to tell you, in the 22 years of Earth that I've spent, I cannot remember a more disappointing season as a Cowboys fan. I mean, you're talking about Super Bowl expectations coming into the season. And now, like, I remember completely the 13-3 year in 08, 07, 08. I remember the Tony Romo bobbling the snap. I remember all those years. But those years, you know, the expectations, I feel like, weren't as high. In this preseason right here, with, you know, before the year, beating the Dolphins and the Giants and all those teams early on, those terrible teams. Go 3-0, Super Bowl expectations right in front of us. And then we're going to finish at best 8-8?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. And, you know, it's just it's one of those times where I'm not as frustrated as I am just disappointed. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, I've accepted that this year's been a big disappointment. And, you know, I've stood behind Jason Garrett for a while now. I've been one of Jason Garrett's biggest supporters but over the last 2 or 3 years, it's one of those things now where it's like, okay, I've had enough. And it's, you know, I've tried supporting Jason Garrett, but it's one of those things where, you know, just mediocrity just continues to carry over. And this team is too talented to be an 8-8 football team, let alone a 7-9 losing record football team. It's just mind boggling to me how a coaching staff can kind of just, it just doesn't make sense. And changes need to be made, and I'm welcome to any changes being made. And I don't think anyone on the staff is even safe. And obviously, yeah, you don't want to, you know, advocate for someone losing their job, because this is their livelihood. This is the families we're talking about here. But just from a reality standpoint, changes will be made. And no one on the staff is safe. And let me tell you, if the Cowboys do not make the playoffs, if the Eagles indeed beat the Giants on Sunday, Jerry Jones is firing everybody in that locker room. He's firing everybody in that coaching room. He's making wholesale changes. I mean, you may see guys like Amari Cooper let go, in terms of not being safe. You may see Byron Jones being let go. Dak Prescott might get franchise tagged. You're talking about, like, wholesale changes. Jerry Jones isn't going to deal with this anymore. And I think it's gone past the point of frustration. It's gone to the point where it's like, are you kidding me? Like, disappointed. So it's just very disappointing. I wasn't even, like, upset or mad at after the game. I was just kind of like, really? Is this, like, are we this bad? We lost to an Eagles team without Lane Johnson, Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson. They're basically their entire secondary. Like, what's going on here? So it just doesn't make sense, and changes need to be made. So that's all I have on the Cowboys for now. It's going to be a very interesting offseason to really witness and watch.
It is, and I thought there was two things that really happened in this game, and it was Jason Garrett. He just – it's just hard to explain. Like, they just don't seem to believe in him anymore. And his voice has just kind of got stale in the locker room. And also,
and
I think
crazy.
It
that's
is.
That's crazy because Jason Garrett, if you think Jason Garrett, if above all else, he's a leader in that locker room, or play where, like, if there's one thing, like, obviously, has some adjustments. He wasn't calling the plays anymore. If there's one thing that he had left, is that people, like, respected him. He had the voice. He created a culture. This is a guy that, you know, people respected when he spoke up. And over the last, you know, year and a half, it's kind of, like, waned. You know, and you just talked about, like, people just don't – they answered him anymore. It's almost like he lost the locker room. And through 10 years of Jason Garrett as the coach, this past year, it's the first time I've seen where he's really lost control of his locker room.
Definitely. And also, the second thing I want to say, Dak Prescott has been phenomenal this year, and I think he definitely deserves the extension. But this game, I thought he played himself into the franchise tag. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely agree. I think, you know, the shoulder had an issue with it.
Yeah.
But he had a banged up shoulder. But at the same time, you know, it's one of those things where you have the weapons. We traded a first round pick for Amari Cooper, who's not on the field on the biggest play of the season. Makes zero, that's another indictment on Jason Garrett and his coaching staff, by the way. Guys like Michael Gallup out there, who's had a phenomenal year. First time the Cowboys have had a 1,000-yard receiving duo since 2012. And you're talking about a team that's 900 winning record going to the final game of the season. Dak Prescott, 4,000 yards. Zeke Elliott, 1,000 yards. Cooper and Gallup, both 1,000 yards. Your team's 7-8. It just doesn't add up. And I feel like, you know, Dak has had the opportunity. Dak played really well at the beginning of the season, and really for the first half of the season, phenomenal. But something happened to where it's almost like he peaked, and he just hasn't, like, just kept getting better and better, whereas it looked like that's where his trajectory was going. So I wonder if this front office is going to start just asking themselves, what is Dak's upside? Because obviously we're talking about Dak as an MVP candidate, you know, in the middle of the season. I think he rightfully was. But at some point, do you have to ask yourself, how much better is Dak going to get as a passer? Because, you know, he has the weapons around him, but there's just some times where there are a lot of throws he made in this game that were, you know, wide open looks. Tavon Austin running by Rasul Douglas on the last drive of the game. Should have made a touchdown. Michael Gallup on several plays. But, you know, and the crazy thing about this Eagles game was that when Dak Prescott finally made good throws, the receivers didn't help him at all. They dropped him. Amari Cooper dropped a big third down play. Michael Gallup dropped a potential touchdown on the final drive of the game. So you're talking about, you know, just inconsistencies across the board. And I just wonder, like you said, he might have played himself into the franchise tag in this game. And I know the shoulder did play a part. I'm not going to dismiss that whatsoever. But you could, I mean, Dak said at the press conference that shoulder really wasn't bothering him as much as people were saying it was. And so you're wondering yourself, are the Cowboys going to really put $40 million into him? And if it were me, I think, do you even have an option? I think you would probably try to bring it down to 35.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to. I mean, but it's just like, do you take that risk? Because, you know, are you going to sign Amari Cooper? Because Dak Prescott was a different quarterback without Amari Cooper, if you remember. So it's going to be very interesting to see how that whole plays out. But I think you're right. I think if the Cowboys do not make the playoffs, I just don't see any way they don't use a franchise tag on him.
Yeah, and I agree. And then don't get me started on my Vikings, man. Just so disappointing, you know, with so much on the line. And, you know, you can't ask for a better situation. You're at home against your division rival, and then you just lay flat on your face like that.
Yep.
Everybody knows how I feel about Mike Zimmer. I love Mike Zimmer, the coach, but I just think the Vikings have maxed out with what they can do with him, if that makes sense. And I've compared them time and time again. This may be a little bit harsh, but the Vikings are the NFC version of the Marvin Lewis Bengals to me.
Wow.
When they were making their playoff runs as far as, you know, first round exit after first round exit. And I just feel like this team has maxed out with Mike Zimmer. And I think the world of Mike Zimmer. I think he's a hell of a head coach. But I just think, I don't want to say it's time to move on, but it's going to be a make or break year entering next season with Kirk Cousins and, you know, Mike Zimmer and Rick Spielman on the final year of their deal. And I'm just going to go ahead and put it out there. This team's going to be a one and done in the playoffs, man. They are built to beat the good teams in the NFC and around the league, but as far as the elite teams, they're just not built to beat those teams. And, you know, it starts with Kirk Cousins, man. Everybody knows about the record and how he just doesn't show up in prime time, and the team just always lays flat on their face for some reason. It's just a weird stigma with that team. But enough about the NFL. We are here to debate about college football. Of course, we could go on rants all day about our teams, just because we are two very mad individuals right now. So don't get us started on our NFL teams. But before we move on, we get into some of the game recaps, bowl game recaps. So I'm sorry, I didn't review the show notes for you guys today. So I got a little bit off track there just because we were talking about our disappointments and our frustrations with our NFL team. So today we will be recapping Utah State and Kent State and also Washington and Boise State in the first segment. And then we'll finish up with a Christmas special edition where we will gift wrap some prospects to certain teams throughout the NFL as gifts for Christmas. So once again, I just want to say, or I didn't say it opening the show, Merry Christmas to you and yours for those of you that are listening to the show, and also Happy New Year as well. I'm just going to go ahead and throw that out there. But before we move on, I do want to remind you guys about Breaking Tea. If you are looking for a last-minute fun sports gift for the holidays, go to BreakingTea.com/LockedOn. That's Break and Tee makes sports t-shirts around team's passion moments. It is great for all fans. You can go to breakandtee.com/lockedon and then feel free to search the site for great shirts and also fun sports gifts. Again, that's breakandtee.com/lockedon. That's LOCKEDON. All right, let's get into some of these bowl game recaps. And we are in the middle of bowl season, I should say. We got some really big matchups coming up this weekend of the college football playoff between Clemson and Ohio State and also Oklahoma and LSU. We will get into that on Friday's show, of course. And I cannot wait to get into those segments with you. We're going to give out some predictions, and we're going to go ahead and predict a national champion as well before we actually know who is going to be in the championship, just because I think that's going to be some very raw responses as far as some of the things we could predict throughout the college football playoff. But before we get to that point, I do want to talk about some of these bowl games we did see over the weekend. Utah State, Kent State, that was the headliner matchup going into the weekend just because of one player, and it simply was Jordan Love. Everybody, you know, wants to talk about him. He's been a highly debated prospect already. He's already accepted his Senior Bowl invitation as well, and there's going to be so many debates about him. We've debated about him endlessly already on here, and of course, that is not going to be the last debate about him on here as well, just because he's a popular name. He's probably going to be one of the more polarizing prospects in this draft class. But as far as just recapping the game, I thought he played really well. And I think this is one of the better games that he did show this year, in my opinion. And I know Kent State didn't have the best defense in the world. They came into this game with the 120th ranked defense in the country. So he did what he was expected to do. He ended up 30 for 39, 317 yards, 3 touchdowns, and he had the lone interception that wasn't his fault off of the tip pass. So I thought Jordan Love showed what we wanted to see in this game, and I wrote a quick recap about this game, and I highlighted some of the plays that he did show. I love the eye discipline that he showed in this game. You saw the huge release that he has and how the ball just jumps violently off his hands, and I thought that's what he got back to in this game, and it really looked like the 2018 form that we saw when he threw 32 touchdowns and 6 interceptions a season ago. So that was really good to see him leave on a high note. But what did you see in this game that left you so encouraged about Love?
Yeah, and what did we talk about last podcast about Jordan Love? Was that all he needed to do in this bowl game was to check the boxes. We know how talented he is. We know how naturally gifted he is. And when he goes to the Senior Bowl, he's going to draw so many first impression looks just because of how he said that velocity off of his arm. You know, just that pure arm talent to throw the ball at different angles, different positions. This guy has elite arm talent, and we know that. But the biggest thing with him is, like, the same thing with Deshaun Kizer, the same thing with, like, guys like Jameis Winston. Talking about guys like, you know, when you know, poor decision-making, they think they can fit any throw into any different spot. And, you know, it's got kind of overconfidence, right? And, you know, we've seen a lot of that, you know, whereas, you know, lack of pocket poise or just lack of decision-making in the pocket. Any of all of that, we saw that all rear its ugly head this season. And what we needed to see from him in this bowl game with Kent State, and this is what we did see, was him play more comfortable and more calm in the pocket, making the right reads and using his arm talent, you know, it more responsibly. And that's all we needed to see in this game. And because we know how talented he is, we need to see him, you know, become more responsible as a pocket passer. That's exactly what he showed against Kent State. I mean, that interception obviously was not his fault. I mean, tip pass, fluke deal, and it'll go in the box score, but you know, every scout will see that as, you know, not as a negative. So I think that there's nothing but positive coming out of this game for Jordan Love. I know he didn't get the win, you know, 51-41, some old scouts will tell you that quarterbacks need to have wins, you know, coming out of college. But, I mean, to me, Jordan Love has all the traits you would want in a franchise quarterback. It's just all about him putting it together for a full season. And, you know, he did that in 2018 for the most part, but 2019 looked more like Deshaun Kizer Notre Dame. So it's very good to see him, you know, kind of reel it back and show that one of 2018 flashes more so than what he's put on tape this year.
So if you had to bet right now, would you bet on him being a first-round selection?
Yes. The reason why I say that is because the uncertainty around Tua Tagovailoa, and I don't know if Jacob Eason's coming out, but I think teams are going to like Love more than Eason. The reason why I said that, I think Love is just more naturally gifted. I think Love, other than maybe Justin Herbert, Love is the most naturally gifted quarterback in this draft. And I think teams are going to see Love and Herbert very similarly in terms of, you know, both of them are pretty erratic at times. But when you get them in their flashes, you watch their highlights, Here's the thing too about coaching. The difference between coaches and scouts. A scout will look at the entire body of work, and that's what we do, right? We look at the entire body of work. We're judging in a vacuum. A coach, like a quarterback's coach or offensive coordinator, they'll look at their 5 or 10 best throws, and they're like, I can get that out of them. Let's draft him top 10. So I think the team's going to draft Jordan Love really early. And it could be top 15. It could be top 20. Look at all the teams in the middle of the draft, too. You're talking about teams like Carolina, the Los Angeles Chargers, maybe the Raiders. Talk about the Jaguars. They have one of the picks in the late first round. So you're talking about teams in the middle of that draft where, you know, they're going to need quarterbacks, and that's where Jordan Love's range is going to be. So I'm absolutely betting he's going to be a first round pick just on talent alone. For me as an evaluator, I probably have him more graded as a second, third round guy. I've missed too many times on guys like him. But I think a coaching staff or a quarterback's coach or an offensive coordinator is going to look at his 5 or 10 best throws and be like, I can get that out of him consistently. And that's why, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks do go a little early. And I think Love will go top 15, top 20.
So here's my bold prediction. As of December 24th, 2019, I think Jordan Love is going to go top 10. And here's why I say this. Think of all the events he has leading up to the draft, the Senior Bowl, the Combine, the interviews. He's going to ace all of that stuff just because he has a skill set that is going to cater to all those events. He's going to crush the practices at the Senior Bowl just because the arm strength, the arm talent, everybody's going to be wowed by that. The Combine, if he does end up throwing, he's probably going to wow at that as well just because, I mean, you've said it, outside of Jacob Eason and Justin Herbert, he probably has the strongest arm in this class, I would say. So he's going to pass with flying colors at that. He's probably going to crush the interviews as well because everybody talks about how intelligent he is and how well he knows the game. It's just a matter of his decision-making. And I think you were spot on as far as coaches are always going to feel as if they can get the best out of those players. And maybe they just didn't know the certain system that they were running just because this was his first year in that system. Just because if you remember, he had to deal with an entirely new coaching staff during his final year at Utah State. So maybe he just didn't have a lot of comfort in that system. But if you rewind back to 2018, when he was in that system for a couple years, he showed to be very decisive. So what a lot of GMs are probably going to say, think about his second year in that system, and then you compare it to the 1 year in that system that he had to deal with last year. And they probably can get back that 2018 form from him. And then you couple him with maybe a good experienced play caller or a demanding position coach, and maybe you could have, I don't want to say Patrick Mahomes, I don't like comparing anybody to him, but maybe a lighter version of that in a sense. And that's what Jordan Love has been compared to. And you know, I'm a big fan of Jordan Love. I don't want to say I love Jordan Love. I'm just very intrigued by what he can be or what he could be down the road. And that's what makes me so intrigued by him. But what scares me about him is the inaccuracies and the decision making. Maybe you can never get that out of him. And it's like a Jameis Winston situation or a Deshaun Kaiser situation, like you said, but it's just a slippery slope and it's just something that you can't predict. But it's one of those high risk, high reward type of players. And me personally, if I was a GM, I would be fine with taking him in the first round as long as I have the offensive coordinator and position coach to couple with him. And that's not to say if I was, you know, a team like the Jaguars or somebody like that, I probably wouldn't be as comfortable with taking him. But if I'm like the Indianapolis Colts or somebody like where I have Frank Reich, where I can sit him behind Jacoby Brissett for maybe, you know, midway through the season or even an entire year next year, I definitely would be all over Jordan Love. So him going top 10 is my bold prediction as of December 24th.
Man, let me ask you a question here. And regarding Jordan Love, is there another draft prospect in this 2020 class that is going to be more team – his success at the next level is going to be more team fit dependent than Jordan Love?
Ooh, that's a great question. The one I would say is Kalaivon Chaisson. And ooh, I say that because
that's another good one.
He has to be a 3-4 outside linebacker, in my opinion. I don't think he's a base four-man front defensive end. I don't think he can hold up in that type of defense. But if you stand him up in a 3-4 outside linebacker scheme or that position in a certain scheme, I definitely think he could thrive in that. But if he goes to a 4-3 team, I think we're going to have like a Barkevius Mingo situation
where he
just flames out and just bounces around the league just because he wasn't a scheme fit. So I think Chaisson is definitely one of those guys up there as far as a team that's going to – his landing spot is going to be pivotal.
I agree. And see, here's before we go too off track here, I want to just one more thing on Chaisson. And, you know, we were talking earlier off recording about, you know, prospect pass rush comparisons. And to me, Whitney Mercilus is the best comparison for Kalyvon Chaisson. But another player who reminds me of him, and this is strictly a college comparison. I don't know how, you know, you and I started scouting around the same time, around, you know, 2013, 2014-ish. Do you remember Anthony Barr coming out of UCLA?
Absolutely.
Yes. Anthony Barr coming out of UCLA, the same kind of questions. Kind of had to be a 3-4 guy, and he ended up being more so like transitioning into that kind of linebacker role. So I wonder if a team's going to think of Kalyvon Chaisson not as a 4-3 band, but honestly, it's like almost like a hybrid 3-4 outside linebacker off-ball kind of guy. So it's going to be interesting to see where a team values him. Because I could easily see a team like Arizona pulling the trigger on him very early and pairing him with a guy like Chandler Jones. That could happen. I think that's possible. Or I could see him slipping all the way down to like a team like New England at the end of the first round. He's going to be very polarizing this year. But just back to Jordan Love, and you know, you talk about bold predictions. I'll give you a bold prediction right here. I think the New Orleans Saints trade up to get him. And you're talking everything about it. It's going to take a team with an established quarterback. It's going to take a team with a confident, smart play caller who's going to be there, who's not going to be fired, the whole system's not going to change. The coaching staff's going to stay there. It's going to be stable. You need a stable environment. You need a team that's going to stay steady. It's not going to – Jordan Love's going to enter a new coaching staff his second year in the league. You definitely don't want that for a young quarterback. And the Saints – They could sit Jordan Love behind Breeze. And this is a team that's been aggressive before. They traded up for Brandon Cooks. They traded two first round picks to get Marcus Davenport. I could see them doing it again because they could argue it's the fact that our 2021 first round pick is Jordan Love. They could market it that way. And I think you could sit him behind Breeze, have him learn under Sean Payton. Sean Payton has been envious of just quarterback, wanting to develop quarterbacks. He wants this guy, wants to draft a guy, and wants a pet project. He just signed a long-term extension. He's going to be there in New Orleans for years and years. So he has time to develop a guy. And Drew Brees is starting – we're starting to see it. Drew Brees' production is starting to just wane just a little bit. We're not seeing him make those downfield throws we've seen him make in years past.
Right.
I think you could see a guy like Jordan Love go to, like I said, Sean Payton, one of the best play callers in football. Obviously, one of the most stable environments of football is you just got a coach get a long-term extension. You know that coach that's going to be there for a while. I could see Jordan Love being a New Orleans Saint by the end of April just because I think New Orleans has been aggressive trading up in the draft, and it's the perfect situation for a developmental guy to sit behind a player like Drew Brees and learn from Sean Payton.
I love that fit, man. And I think that's probably the best of both worlds as far as a fit. Just because he doesn't have to play right away. I think Drew Brees probably has a year or two left in him after this. And, I mean, the Saints are still rolling. They're still playing at a high level. But, Father Time is undefeated. And we're seeing with Tom Brady right now, it's always going to end up catching to these older guys eventually. So, not saying Drew Brees doesn't have, two, three more years left in him. Maybe he does. You never know when Father Time is going to strike just because he still is playing at a high level. Not as efficient as we're accustomed to seeing, but he's still playing at a pretty high level for the most part. But you talk about Jordan Love going into that situation. It could be one of those, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers type of situation. And not saying that Love is going to turn into Aaron Rodgers, but just as far as, being patient with him and letting him sit behind an experienced veteran like Drew Brees, I think that would make for a really smooth transition. And that would be a really good landing spot for him. And I'm a big fan of Jordan Love. You're going to hear me say that plenty of times and time and time again. I can't wait to see him down at the Senior Bowl, and there's going to be so many eyes on him at the Senior Bowl, man. He's going to be one guy I'm probably going to be glued to a lot just to see that ball jump violently off his hands, and I think his stock is going to be through the roof after we leave Mobile. Hopefully he turns you into a fan eventually. I think he might after the event. So really excited about that. We did go a little bit over time on that, so I do want to go ahead and move on to the gift that we're going to give these pro teams, but we're going to do that after the break. So before we move on, here's a quick word from our sponsors. All right, and we are back. And once again, Merry Christmas to you and yours. And so what we're doing in this segment is that we're going to gift wrap a prospect to certain teams throughout the NFL. And we're going to do three each. And I really like this idea just because it is the season of giving. No, we're not Jameis Winston. We're not throwing a million picks as far as giving out interceptions. But, you know, we're giving gifts or we're giving players to these teams. So I'm going to go ahead and go first. And I'm going to go a little bit off the grid here. I'm actually giving a coach to a team.
Oh.
Lincoln Riley to the Cowboys, man. Like,
dude,
come on,
you.
What are we doing here?
I will gladly accept
like,
that.
Like, what are we doing here? Like, just put Lincoln Riley. He gets to stay in the same area. You know, that area of the country is like where that's his domain. He's been there all his life. Texas Tech guy, so he gets to go back to his home state. The only job I think he would ever leave Oklahoma for is the Dallas Cowboys job.
Absolutely.
And I know Jerry Jones doesn't want a coach to overshadow him, but this is one guy I think he has to take a back seat for. And that's not to say to give him complete control of the team as far as giving him final say on the roster. But you talk about a guy that has the star power. He's very young. His system fits very well with a quarterback like Dak Prescott. We'll see what they end up doing with the Amari Cooper situation if they do end up bringing him back. But just imagine him playing the CeeDee Lamb role in a sense in that offense in the NFL. Ezekiel Elliott in that offense. Now, they still have some work to do on defense. I still think they can retool some things there. And we'll see who he would end up bringing in as far as a coordinator. I think there's going to be some good ones out there for him. And I think that's probably the biggest thing for a young coach, especially one that doesn't have any NFL experience, defensive coordinator and offensive line coach. I think those are the two biggest positions by far that a young head coach, I should say. I think that's the two biggest hires that they do have to make that can help them sustain as far as have some success right away in the NFL. But Lincoln Riley on the Cowboys, man, it makes so much sense. It's just a matter of would he actually listen and entertain those possibilities. That's still an unknown, but I think he has to listen just because of the mantra that Jerry Jones does bring to the table. And just if there's any, like one of the biggest jobs in sports, in my opinion, of course, is quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, but it's also head coach of the Dallas Cowboys. Just the star on the helmet, man. Like I think Lincoln Riley has to at least listen and entertain it.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you did this because, honestly, the gift for the Cowboys this offseason is not just hiring a head coach. It's firing Jason Garrett. I bet you every fan in Dallas just wants Garrett gone. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. They just want change. It's anyone but Garrett. But that's the gift. But you're right about Lincoln Riley. And here's another thing to consider. You know, when people say, oh, Jerry won't get Lincoln Riley, Jerry won't get Urban Meyer, look at the last – Super Bowls Jerry's won. College coaches. Jimmy Johnson. Barry Switzer. And you don't think Jerry knows his window's closing? And
no,
Jerry's getting
question.
Older.
Yeah.
He's relinquished much of the roster control to, you know, the three-headed brain trust, Will McClay and then his son Stephen Jones. He knows his window's closing. And this is why you see him visibly frustrated after games. He wants to win a Super Bowl. He's gonna go all out. And whether that means getting a guy like Lincoln Riley or a guy like Urban Meyer, he's going to go all out for one of these guys. And don't be surprised if he tries to go big fish hunting for like a guy like Bill Belichick or Sean Payton. He thinks he can get one of those guys. And, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, go after Eric Bieniemy or go after, you know, one of
no chance. No
player.
Chance.
To see, you know, 10 years ago when we fired Wade Phillips, maybe. But this is a different time. Jerry wants to win a Super Bowl now. He's going to look for some establishment. He's going to look for star power. And don't be surprised if he goes big fish hunting. He's probably going to end up failing. Obviously, Belichick ain't leaving New England. Sean Payton just signed a 4 or 5 year deal with New Orleans. Those guys probably aren't leaving. But he's going to try. And Jerry Jones, you know him. You sit in a room with Jerry Jones, Jerry Jones will convince you to do anything.
Yeah.
So
Urban Meyer is a sleeper, man.
I think
that could be a possibility.
So. Very much so. And think about what you just did. You signed Ezekiel Elliott. You know, for the next – until 2022, 2023.
Yeah.
And who is his coach? You look at Urban Meyer. And Urban Meyer is a national champion head coach. And Jerry Jones is that success hiring those guys. And he's like, when's the last time I won a Super Bowl? College coaches. So don't count out Lincoln Riley, Urban Meyer. I'm glad you mentioned Lincoln Riley because I think people need to mention him more as a possibility. Because I know people are talking about, like, oh, he's not going to hire offensive guy with Kellen Moore there. Kellen Moore is not safe. Kellen Moore might be a one and done if this team doesn't make the playoffs. Because I can see Jerry Jones blowing this whole thing up. It's been that bad this year for the Cowboys. And I really don't think anyone's safe in this Cowboys front office.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. And I feel your frustration just because both our teams, even though my team's in the playoff, but I just don't have a lot of confidence going forward with this regime. So with that being said, who is your prospect gift to a certain team?
Well, I have the New York Jets. And the New York Jets need several gifts. I will give them two gifts, almost like a stocking. You know, I have a stocking right above the fireplace, a couple of gifts in there. The first gift is firing Adam Gase. Get him out of it. Terrible for the locker room. We've seen it. Meltdowns, internal strife. Sam Darnold doesn't believe in him anymore. Sam Darnold's not going to go any much further in his career with Adam Gase as head coach, bottom line. He needs an offensive-minded guy. He needs someone almost like Eric Bieniemy to come in there and just completely change the offense. I would love to have a quarterback guy go further develop Sam Darnold. We've seen the flashes of Sam Darnold. He can be so good. Yeah. I just think coaching is just holding him back. So the first gift is addition by subtraction, getting rid of Adam Gase. The pink slip, it's in the stocking. The second gift, and this is the final gift, it's the big one. The one that's big old wrap underneath the tree, right there, big bow on it. Jeffrey Okuda, nice. Ohio State cornerback. And, you know, the Jets, you know, they're kind of putting themselves out of the range for big guys like Chase Young, you know, offensive tackle maybe, like guys like Jedrick Wills, Tristan Wirfs. They're kind of outside that range now a little bit. You know, they kind of won some games here lately. Now they're kind of a little, you know, more so 9, 10, 11 now. If offensive tackles go, we know if offensive tackle run happens before them and it's this decision between, like, you know, Andrew Thomas or Jeffrey Okuda, don't be surprised if Okuda's higher on their board, you know. And if you look at their cornerback depth chart now, I'm going to read it to you. Nate Hairston, Daryl Roberts, Arthur Mollett, Brian Poole, Bless You in Austin, Maurice Kennedy, and Bennett Jackson. Do any of these guys convince you that they're going to be on the roster next year?
No.
And here's the thing. The Jets' offensive line, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible offensive line. They need to protect Sam Darnold. Protecting Sam Darnold needs to be priority number one. But their cornerback depth chart is equally bad. It's equally bad. And so if you're saying, well, you know, we drafting cornerback over offensive tackle is terrible. What's going to happen next year is you have a left tackle who's really good protecting Sam Darnold, but your defense is terrible still. And so you can't do everything at once. You got to make some investment. And you know what? If Jeffrey Okuda's on the board and he's higher on the board than Andrew Thomas or one of those guys, you take the best player. Both positions are, you know, so important in a game of football. Now cornerback, especially just because how big the passing game is now. And you're playing in a division against Tom Brady. I mean, you need some secondary help. And I just named off an XFL depth chart at the position. So Jeffrey Okuda will give them much-needed playmaking ability and much-needed just production at that position that they so desperately need. Merry Christmas, New York Jets fans. You get a fired Adam Gase, and you get a newly wrapped Jeffrey Okuda.
There's not much more they can ask than that, in my opinion, just because this team is farther away than people want to admit, in my opinion.
Goodness, yeah.
I was looking at that roster earlier. Man, it is really bad. And Mike Maccagnan left them in a really bad situation. And I'm a believer in Joe Douglas just because he's going to prioritize the trenches, just because that's what he learned in Philadelphia, learning under Howie Roseman. He saw how Howie built up those trenches, you know, bringing in Jason Peters, drafting Lane Johnson, and then, you know, bringing in guys on the opposite end like Fletcher Cox, Chris Long, when he was in his heyday with them, Brandon Graham, Derek Barnett, just building up those trenches. I think he's going to attempt to do the same thing with the Jets, but they have so many holes, and it's not just cornerback. They have holes in other places and just bad contracts all over the place as well. So that team, I'm glad he signed a 6-year deal, and we'll see if he does end up seeing the entirety of that deal, just because I think it's going to take at least half of it for him to turn around that franchise. They have so many holes in that position. So I'm really intrigued to see how he does end up building up that team. But I'm going to go ahead and go with my second gift or player to a team. And this one is pretty much a no-brainer to me, man. It's Jedrick Wills to the Browns. That team needs an offensive tackle in the worst way. And I think they probably need two offensive tackles, in my humble opinion. Just because Chris Hubbard, he's just not the answer there. And we know what Greg Robinson is at this point. He's not the answer at all ever since he was the number two pick a few years back. So they have a huge need of offensive tackle. And it's really been a reason that Baker has regressed. And there's been a whole bunch of reasons why he has regressed, from scheme to, you know, just decision making and things of that nature. But him just not having confidence in the guys up front, I think, has been a huge reason behind that as well. And then you add in a guy like Jedrick Wills, I think he can play left or right tackle, in my opinion. And I posted a clip or some clips from his game against Auburn. And, man, he was so dominant in that game. And I was just so surprised to see how much I ended up liking him after that game. I had to go back and watch some others as well. And it was the same type of consistency across the board in every single game. He's super nasty in the run game, very efficient in the passing game as well. As far as the pass protector, I love how he stays on balance and he uses his hands really well. So he's probably going to end up being the consensus offensive tackle one, which is crazy to say after all these months where we were debating Tristan Wirfs and Andrew Thomas going back and forth with that. Here comes Jedrick Wills out of nowhere, but I think he would be a terrific fit in the Cleveland Browns.
Oh, that is such a great fit. And the only question I have is, how realistic is it? Because now we're talking about Jedrick Wills as a top five, top 10 guy now.
Yeah.
Do the Browns put themselves in position to add that kind of pick? Do they trade up, potentially move around some capital? Because I think they're, you know, squarely in the race for a guy like Trent Williams, you know, in the offseason.
Yeah, they will tried be.
Getting him. And, you know, John Dorsey's very, very aggressive. So I could see them getting out Trent Williams and addressing that spot. But if they don't, you know, they could very well trade up and get him. I mean, John Dorsey, you look at his past drafts, and, you know, he's put it on to his, you know, successor Brett Veach in Kansas City as well. He's very aggressive training. Comes from the Elliott Wolf tree. You know, they're not afraid to go up and get guys. We've seen it with John Dorsey getting Patrick Mahomes. You know, he's not afraid to go get a guy when he needs him. And Jedrick Wills could very well, if Jedrick Wills goes, you know, top five, top seven guy, and the Browns are picking like 15th or 16th, don't be surprised if he trades, you know, future draft picks to get him. Because Jedrick Wills is going to be one of those guys that I think a lot of NFL teams are really high on. His athleticism, his size, his length. Some teams, I think, will have him as a top tackle on the draft board. And so I could very easily see a team trading up for him. We know offensive tackles, they go, you know, a round early, a half round early, just because of the positional value. And because of how I think the Browns are really held back by their offensive line. I think coaching has really played a big part in that too. Just the locker room culture over there has been terrible. But the offensive line has been abysmal all year, and it's really held back Baker Mayfield from taking the next step, in my opinion. So I think the two biggest things the Browns are really going to focus on this offseason, changing the culture and rebuilding the offensive line.
Definitely, as they should. They have to find a way to protect Baker Mayfield, just because he was the former number one overall pick, and he has seen as the franchise quarterback, especially being so successful his rookie year. But it's no secret that he has taken a massive step back. And there's some real life issues in Cleveland, man. They have some really, really big issues going on there. And we'll see what does end up happening with Freddie Kitchens. If he is a one and done, they have players saying, come get me, to every team throughout the week they do play. Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, some others have said that. There's a weird situation with David Njoku going on there where he was a healthy scratch for the second consecutive week. So there's a lot of weird things going on in Cleveland, but we'll see what does happen and what does transpire as they go through the offseason. So moving on to your second prospect gift of the year. Merry Christmas once again to you and yours. Who is your second prospect gift?
Well, this team needs to hit on draft picks. We're talking about the Oakland Raiders going into the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, Mike Mayock, they must hit on this draft capital. He would not have hired Mike Mayock if they didn't make this Khalil Mack trade. They would not have hired Mike Mayock if they didn't make the Amari Cooper trade. They needed someone to rebuild their team through the draft. And Mark Davis thought Mike Mayock was the guy. Outside the box hire, but this is a guy that knows the draft. And he wants to rebuild through it. And it's on Mike Mayock to really fix it. And they need to hit on draft picks. And the gift I'm giving them is Henry Ruggs from Alabama. This is a team that Derek Carr, I think, has peaked in his offense. He needs playmakers. And yeah. if you listen to what Mike Mayock said in the press conference last year, but right after he took the Raiders' job, they asked him a question about Derek Carr, and I don't think his mindset has changed on this. I think Derek Carr has played well enough to keep his job for another year, but I don't think his mindset has changed on this. This is what he said. He said, "Derek," it's in a nutshell. I'm paraphrasing. He basically said, "Derek Carr is our guy. We need to surround. He's a start. There's only 32 starting quarterbacks in the league, and Derek Carr is one of them. We believe Derek Carr is a franchise guy, and we need to surround him with talent outside of him. We need playmakers, and we need speed. Keyword speed. Henry Ruggs is going to be the fastest player in this draft.
Definitely.
He's going to run somewhere around 4.25 to 4.35, somewhere in that range. Would not be surprised at all if he, you know, runs closer to John Ross. I mean, this guy has lightning quick speed. This is a crazy fast guy. Henry Ruggs is going to be a guy that is going to blow up after the combine. And I could easily see the ghost of Al Davis's past coming to the Raiders and drafting Henry Ruggs. But don't get fooled. Henry Ruggs is not just a speed guy.
He's not Darius Hayward Bay.
yeah, exactly. Or Darius Hayward Bay, or Fabian Washington at cornerback. You know, he's not just a speed guy. This guy can actually play the wide position. He's a very underrated route runner. My goodness, this guy can run routes. If this guy, it reminds me almost of Tyreek Hill. Career, right? Where Tyreek Hill was kind of used mostly as a gadget speed dude, but then, you know, year after year after year, I think Tyreek Hill is one of the most underrated route runners in the NFL right now. You just can't guard him, man.
Without question.
This guy is too fast and too quick. And you've seen it. Every game Henry Ruggs plays, he gets better and more nuanced and with each break in his route. And he looks so much more smooth. This is such a smooth mover. And he has some of the best hands in this entire draft, too. This guy goes up. You know, just natural hands catcher, catching outside of his radius, has a wide catch radius, long frame. I love Henry Ruggs. I think there will be a lot of teams that have him as the top Alabama wide receiver over Jerry Jeudy. There's a chance he'll be the number one receiver on many boards.
Yeah.
Just because of his speed, his size, his ability to make plays after the catch. There's going to be a lot of teams that have him as the number one guy. I mean, we talk about John Ross going top 10, Hollywood Brown going top 25, Corey Coleman being the first receiver drafted in his class. But those guys are much smaller than Henry Ruggs. I mean, speed kills. Teams know that how valuable speed is. It doesn't matter how good a technique you are at the quarterback position. If a guy's just flat out just that much faster than you, you can't guard him.
Right.
It's that simple. And when you add to the fact that he adds much more nuance to the position than those other three guys did coming out of college, man, it's going to be a hard time selling me on him not being a top 20, you know, top 15, top 20 pick. He could very well be the first year drafted. And the Raiders are in position to be – and with that draft capital, to put themselves in position to be – we're going to get the first receiver. We need a playmaker for Derek Carr. We need – and as Mayock said, we need playmakers for Carr and we need speed. Henry Ruggs is both. Henry Ruggs can be the number one guy on that Raiders offense. Merry Christmas, Oakland, soon to be Las Vegas.
He's one of those players that could be a surprise top 12 pick. Just because we saw with John Ross, and we know that there are certain teams that just value speed over anything else. And I think that's something that the Raiders are going into the offseason thinking. They have a promising piece in Hunter Renfrow. They have some other promising pieces on the receiving corps, but they just don't have that guy that can stretch the field vertically down the field. And that's something that Henry Ruggs does bring to the table. And they don't have an ultimate playmaker on the perimeter as well. So they need speed, like you said. And then we'll see what does happen with the quarterback situation, whether they elect to, you know, bringing in more veteran piece, or if they trade up in the draft for somebody that I think that's something that definitely could be a viable option for them. And one thing is for certain, I think this is definitely a conspiracy theory of mine, just because the draft is in Vegas. The Raiders are really going to want to start in a new city with a bang. So don't be surprised if they trade up for a quarterback either. That would not surprise me, like a Justin Herbert or somebody like that. It would not surprise me one bit if they trade up.
Or this, like we talked about last or one of the previous podcasts, get Henry Ruggs at pick 13, 14, and then with the Bears, you go up and get Jalen Hurts.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds crazy. You think Jalen Hurts first-round pick, but, I mean, if Jalen Hurts goes out and wins the college football playoff, he's absolutely a first-round pick.
Yeah. I agree.
And you don't think Gruden's going to love Jalen Hurts? You're talking about John Gruden. Loved Tim Tebow. Loved Dak Prescott. Loved all these mobile guys who can do multiple things. Leaders. Natural guys who in the pocket. Just calm, poised. Winners. Leaders. Jalen Hurts is all of that. Jalen Hurts may not be the best pocket passer. He may not be everyone's cup of tea. but he definitely is John Gruden. I'm telling you, if Jalen Hurts shows out in the college football playoff, even if he doesn't win, if he makes the games close, oh boy, you're talking about going to Las Vegas. You need to excite a new fan base. You need to get, butts in the seats. Jalen Hurts could be a Raider, come next April.
It's definitely going to be interesting, man. And just because Mike Mayock, John Gruden, they're going to go into a new city, a new situation with a bang. And I'm sure that's something that Mark Davis wants with this new city as well. So the Raiders are going to have a super interesting offseason just because I'm not a huge fan of Derek Carr, and I really don't think he's the answer there. And I think they probably want to move on, maybe not this year, maybe next year, but it wouldn't be surprise me at all. It wouldn't surprise me at all if they do end up moving on after this season just because he wasn't their draft pick. And it's just kind of a thing where he's just there for them just because he was a carryover from the previous regime. And they're going to give him every opportunity to prove that he can be that guy going forward. But he just hasn't been able to return to what we saw in 2016, where I thought he had one of his best years of his career. And injuries have kind of deteriorated his body with him. He's had some back injuries. He's had some other nagging injuries as well. But I'm not a huge fan of Carr, but I would understand if they do give him one more year to prove he can be that guy for them going forward.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, to me, Derek Carr is nothing more than an above-average quarterback at his peak. I mean, that's just – I think that's – his ceiling is what, Kirk Cousins? I mean, yeah. I just don't – and if you're banking on that as your team, that's fine. I mean, I think a lot of teams would love to have Kirk Cousins. But if you have the draft capital to, get – Tua Tagovailoa, or hit a home run on one of these quarterbacks. You gotta do it, man. You gotta take the risk. I mean, you don't get many. There are not many opportunities to have that where you have two first round picks, and in the middle of the draft where you can move up and make some serious damage with those trades, man. I'm telling you, you traded Khalil Mack, you traded Amari Cooper, you traded two cornerstones of your team. If you don't believe Derek Carr's the answer, man, it would startle me if they don't go up and try to get a Tua Tagovailoa or something like that. To me, I don't think Derek Carr is the answer. I personally think Mike Mayock, from what he said, I think Mike Mayock's a fan of him. It's just going to depend on where Gruden and his coaching staff stand on Carr, because I just think that at some point, if they end up not making the playoffs, it's just something's got to give, right? And I just don't know if Carr is going to be the guy.
I agree. And then, going into year three, that's supposed to be like the year where you show a bunch of growth. And they did show growth in year two. I thought they had a phenomenal rookie class this year. They had a whole bunch of instant impact type of guys that did contribute from top to bottom. But year three, that's really where you're expected to make the jump. And with them going into a new city, a new situation, I think they're going to want to create some excitement with that. So a new quarterback definitely could be a situation where they do end up moving on from Derek Carr. But we'll see what does end up happening with that situation. So for my last gift of Christmas, I'm going to go to Arizona. I'm going to travel to the desert. And while we were on the receiver discussion with Henry Ruggs, I'm going to go to another top receiver in this draft. I'm going to give CeeDee Lamb to the Arizona Cardinals.
Oh, Kyler.
I love this fit just because similar. Absolutely. Teaming back up with Kyler, back up with Cliff Kingsbury in that same system, or a similar system, I should say. There's not going to be a huge transition period with him as far as, learning a new system. He's very familiar with it, very similar terminology with the air raid, with Larry Fitzgerald really in his waning moments of his career. Let's put CeeDee Lamb with him for his last hurrah, with Christian Kirk, with Andy Isabella, and let's get this thing going. Kenyon Drake has showed some promising signs for that backfield. I think David Johnson is probably going to end up being cut there, so but they do have some promising pieces outside of that with Kyler Murray. They have to build this thing around Kyler, in my opinion. They need a number one wide receiver desperately just because they can't keep asking Larry Fitzgerald to come back and be that guy just because he's going to end up retiring on them very soon. So getting CeeDee Lamb to be that number one guy. Yes, I know they need a ton of help on defense and also in other areas as well, specifically up front. But with this being a deep tackle class, I think that's where they probably need the most help. I think they can get CeeDee Lamb in the first round and then coming back in the second round and getting a guy like a Prince Tagovailoa. I think that definitely could be a very interesting start to the draft for the Arizona Cardinals. So I'm putting CeeDee Lamb on the Cardinals in the Cardinals stocking for Christmas.
I love it. I mean, you couldn't ask for a better fit for CeeDee Lamb. I mean, if Larry Fitzgerald's going to be there another year, you get to, you know, learn under him. You get to be an instant impact player. You get a lot of playing time. Put your former quarterback, so the chemistry is already there, where you can, you know, potentially have, you know, an incredible rookie season. You can't ask for a better fit for CeeDee Lamb. I mean, you know, Cliff Kingsbury's moving towards a passing offense, vertical offense. Dude, it's a perfect dream scenario for CeeDee Lamb. I love it.
I'm a big fan of it. So, wrapping up this segment and our show for the day, who is your final prospect gift for Christmas?
Man, and this team has had not a good 2019, Jordan. The Jacksonville Jaguars. Oh, man.
Wow, Nick Foles, it's been a rough year for them.
Nick Foles getting hurt. Gardner Minshew. Minshew mania. And then it fell apart. And then Tom Coughlin. Or then Jalen Ramsey. And then Tom Coughlin. And then the culture just falling apart. Now you don't know if Doug Marrone's going to be back. Now you don't know if the GM's going to be back. Oh, man. It's a disaster in Jacksonville. And this roster is far away. I don't know if you looked at this roster. You know, they're in full rebuild mode, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They don't have a quarterback. You know, Leonard Fournette, you know, what's his future in Jacksonville? You know, new coaching staff. Possibly new GM. He could be out the door. You look at wide receivers, DJ Chark. Anyone else in that receiver depth chart really excite you? Not me. I mean, I don't think
not
so.
Not at all.
Offensive line is just meh. You're talking about, you know, secondary without Jalen Ramsey. You got A.J. Boye over there, but anyone else excite you over there? No. I mean, this is a team that just lacks, like, just a ton of talent. This is it, to me, it's going to be one of the hardest teams to turn around in football. You don't really have an identity. No coaching staff there. Quarterback, not answer. Man, but you do have the draft capital to make some moves. So here's what I'll tell you. I'm going to give them two guys for my gifts. First one is Isaiah. You talk about draft. This Jacksonville Jaguars team needs to hit. It is this one. They need this. They need to hit. Because if they don't hit on these picks, they're going to be the Cleveland Browns or, you know, Phil Taylor's. Justin Gilbert's. They can't afford to have a Phil Taylor or Justin Gilbert in this draft. They must hit. They have their picks. They need to hit them. Isaiah Simmons to me is a can't-miss guy. We talked about it early on in the podcast, who are the can't-miss guys. Isaiah Simmons to me is. I think he's a Telvin Smith-like player. And this Jaguars defense, you'd be lying to yourself if you said this Jaguars defense doesn't look different without Telvin Smith in the middle of their defense. His speed, his ability to play in coverage, his ability to play in space, it was unparalleled in the league. And Isaiah Simmons, to me, can be that kind of player in the league. I think he has a chance to be a Darius Leonard impact, like all-pro right away. With his ability to make an impact in the passing game, his speed, is something you don't see in the linebacker position. What linebackers on 4-3-5?
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, it's mind-boggling to me that people think Isaiah Simmons isn't a top-10 prospect. Because this guy has the traits. If you told me after last year he wasn't, fine. But after this year, well, he's short of inside linebacker for Clemson with his numbers? Come on. This guy checked every box he needed to this year. To me, Isaiah Simmons is a can't-miss guy. I think he's Telvin Smith 2.0. The Jaguars find a way to get him. That is just a Christmas present in and of its own. Now, the next guy I want to give them, and because the Jaguars are, a year away, I think they could use this guy. And you talked about as a potential, you know, just – I just don't see them as a team that's going to compete right away. They just need to add pieces. They just need to add pieces. Josh Jones from Houston. You need guys who can just compete and need talent guys. You know, and Josh Jones, a lot of people aren't going to be as high on him, but I'm not going to throw – I mean, a lot of people will try to give him Jordan Love or Jalen Hurts or one of those guys. I'm not throwing a quarterback into that situation. Are you kidding me? I'm just drafting talent right now. Why would you want to draft a quarterback right – I understand, like, you know, if you want to give them Tua, you want to give them Herbert, you want to give them anyone. If I'm a GM, I'm not drafting a quarterback right now. Are you kidding me? Under unstable situation? No way. I'm getting pieces that I know will work out. And to me, Josh Jones is a guy after that top, you know, tier of tackles, Wirfs, Thomas, Wills. Josh Jones to me is the next guy. And that Jaguars pick, you know, where the Rams are going to pick it about somewhere around 18, 19. Josh Jones to me is right in that sweet spot. And you need to retool that offensive line to protect your next quarterback that comes in. And Josh Jones, to me, is a guy who plays either left or right tackle. played guard even at Houston, former basketball player, super athletic, super flexible, strong, long. I love everything about Josh Jones. Four-year starter, captain. I think he's going to be a stud. And in this draft, like I said, you can't afford to have Browns, you know, Justin Gilbert, Phil Taylors. You need hits. You don't need home runs, but you need hits. And Justin Jones, to me, is a perfect example of a double in baseball. And he's not, you're not going to swing and miss on Josh Jones. So to me, that Isaiah Simmons, Josh Jones first round is a perfect scenario for Jacksonville Jaguars.
I love it. And you just continue to stockpile offensive line talent. You have, you know, Josh Jones, Cam Robinson, Juwan Taylor. You have three good offensive tackles. You can never have too many offensive tackles, in my opinion, just because you have a young quarterback that you're looking to protect. And we know he doesn't have the best arm talent in the world. And even though he is mobile, he's not the most mobile quarterback in the league, I should say. So, and Gardner Minshew, and we'll see what does happen with Nick Foles' situation. I think they are a bit stuck with that contract, even though if they do entertain a trade, I don't know how many suitors they would have considering his contract, even though Chicago definitely would be smart to trade some draft capital for Nick Foles if they do end up striking out on some guys in free agency. So I love the fit with Isaiah Simmons as well. And let's say Telvin Smith does come back. You have Telvin Smith, you have Miles Jack, and also Isaiah Simmons. Just look at the speed on the second level of that defense. That really would be incredible. And they already have some promising pieces up front as well. So we'll see what happens with the Yannick Ngakoue situation if they do end up re-signing him, which I think they should. And if he does end up hitting the open market, he's going to get a record type of money. So the Jaguars, they definitely are a team that I think peaked when they did lose in the AFC Championship game to the Patriots a few years ago. I think that was their peak as far as where they could go and the success that they could have. And they would be smart to definitely rebuild this thing. But we'll see if they do end up believing in Gardner Minshew or if they go forward with Nick Foles. But I love the fit with Isaiah Simmons. I think this is one of the teams that would be best for him just because they can utilize his skill set in that defense. And even though I think Doug Marrone is a really good coach, we'll see if he is in the future plans with them. They have already gotten rid of Tom Coughlin. So I think that is a good sign for Marrone as far as returning for next year. But, of course, we don't know. Black Monday will be upon us next week. So we'll see what does end up happening with this situation. But once again, thank you guys for listening to the show. That is our show for the day. And that is our show until Friday. We will be back. But once again, on behalf of the Locked On College Football Podcast, we wanted to wish you a Merry Christmas. But we will be back on Friday to continue to talk about bowl games and the college football playoffs. So make sure you stay tuned in with us. Once again, thank you for listening. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast and leave a 5-star review. We will be back on Friday. See you then.